Hello and welcome to the Naked Neuroscience Podcast with me, Hannah Critchlow. This month, we're switching on our pleasure zones to uncover music in the mind. We'll be finding out whether listening to Mozart as a baby in the womb increases your IQ 20 years down the line. And could we all ever achieve absolute pitch? Plus, earworms. So why are 1 in 6 people regularly infected by those annoying bits of music that go round and round in your head? This is the Naked Neuroscience Podcast with me, Hannah Critchlow, brought to you in association with the Wellcome Trust and in partnership with the British Neuroscience Association. Kicking off the programme, we've had loads of questions from you on the topic of music in the brain. So to answer a few of them, I went to visit Professor Ian Cross, Director of the Centre for Music and Science at Cambridge University. To start with, Beck Hansen got in touch to ask, why can she recall lyrics from a song that she hasn't heard for years, and even poetry, but she can't remember words from books? Ian thinks it's due to the structure of poetry and music.
That gives us a hook to hang the words on. We know that if the words don't match with that temporal structure, they can't be the right words. So that kind of narrows down the problem space, narrows down the search space. With lyrics to a piece of music, it's probably even more so, because there's not only the rhythmic structure, but there's also a melodic structure, the tune, the ups and downs in pitch that the words accompany. Put all those together, and that gives you a very powerful set of cues that help you remember, much more powerful than just remembering random stretches of text or speech.
And Carly Pease has been in touch, asking, how does perfect pitch work, and how come some people have it and others don't? Is it something that you can learn?
Well, we tend to prefer to say absolute pitch rather than perfect pitch, because it's not perfect. It is absolute. That is, when you hear a note, you know it's, oh, that's an A, that's a B, whatever. Absolute pitch is something that you probably do learn, or perhaps better, unlearn. It's quite likely that in early infancy, we're attuned to absolute pitch as a useful way of distinguishing events in the world. But as we develop, as we grow, it becomes less and less useful. And frequency relationship invariants, in musical intervals, if you like, become more significant as ways of differentiating between events in the world than the absolute pitches at which those frequency intervals occur. However, some people do retain and develop the capacity to identify absolute pitches absolutely. Typically, if they start learning piano at age 4 or 5, there was an interesting study done a few years ago where the incidence of absolute pitch in a Japanese conservatoire and in a Greek conservatoire was compared. The incidence of absolute pitch in the Greek conservatoire was about 3%. 3% of the students had absolute pitch. In the Japanese conservatory, 57%. Why the difference? Well, the researcher looked quite closely at a number of things and suggested, actually, it was a question of the age at which people started learning instruments, the likelihood that they were learning piano first, and the amount of practice that they put in, the amount of hours. The Greeks apparently seemed to be much more laid back and, oh, whatever, whereas the Japanese were, must do this, must do my 8 hours today. There was a researcher called Paul Brady who tried to learn absolute pitch, give himself absolute pitch, in his mid-40s, I think. And he eventually did learn to be able to identify pitches absolutely, but it was always effortful for him, and it was much, much slower than someone who has developed absolute pitch, quote, naturally, unquote.
Thank you, Professor Ian Cross from Cambridge University, and he'll be back again later in the show to tackle some more of your questions.